Side 10, Gravity's Rainbow, by Thomas Pynchon. Continuing on page 328.
Why are you burning my doll's hair?
That's not her own hair, you know. Father said it belonged to a Russian Jewess. Why don't you come into the fire? Hurts my eyes. Winding again, nothing moves, but a music box begins to play. The tune is minor and precise.
Dance with
me. I can't see you.
Here.
Out of the fire's pale, a tiny frost flower. He reaches and just manages to find her hand, to grasp her little waist. They begin their stately dance. He can't even tell if he's leading.
I wore it for my first communion.
The fire died presently, a faint glow over some town to the east through windows whose panes were all gone. The music box still played, beyond the runtime, it seemed, of an ordinary spring. Their feet over clouded, crumbled glass, wave vans, ink and blood on the air of his dungeon, she had veiled arms. Well, here he is, skidded out onto the zone, well, in his brain might string, he can feel a sensitive's fingers. Resting lightly but sure on his, and he thinks of them as Katya's. He's still a correspondent, though back in British uniform these days, with plenty of time on these trains to hash over in his mind for him back there in Zurich. There is a fat firelight, Polex G, and it seems to point to Norsen. The engineer on the customer end of the Imipolex contract was one Sperkler. He came to Nordhausen in early 44 as the rocket was going into mass production. He was billeted in a Mittelwerke, an underground factory complex run largely by the SS. No word on where he went. The plant was evacuated in February and March, but Ian Scuffling, ace reporter, will be sure to find a clue in Mittelwerke. Slothrop sat in the swaying car with certain tattered eyes, all pupil, lips cratered with sores. They were singing, a lot of them kids. It is a displaced person's song. And Slothrop will hear it often around the zone, in the encampments, out on the road, in a dozen variations. If you see a train this evening, far away against the sky, why would the train go by? Trains have called us every midnight from 1,000 miles away to pass through empty cities, trains that have no place to stay. No one tends the staring light. Trains have never belonged to bitter night. Railway stations stand deserted. Rights of way lie clear and cold. Trains inherit trains, they like cheated love at their cries find own wind. Trains are meant for night, wind and sin. Pipes are passing around. Smoke hangs wood slats as whip racks into the night slipstream. Children wheeze in their sleep. The rachitic babies cry, and the mothers excite his paper misfortune. The Swiss firm's Dassumpf listed all his assets at the time came to work in Zurich. As token scientist on the board of directors of Grüssli Chemical Corporation, as late as 1920, among stock options and pieces of this firm that back in Germany, pieced in over the next year or two by the Octopus IG, was the record of a transaction between and Mr. Lyle Bland in Massachusetts. On the beam, Jackson, Lyle Bland is a name he knows, and also shows up often with records Jampf kept in his deals. The band, during the early 20s, was heavily involved with the Hugo Stinnes operation in Germany. Stinnes, while he lasted, was European finance. Baker generated Stinnes built up a good-sized empire of steel, gas, electric, and water power. Largely was during the World War, he worked closely with Walter Rathenau, who was Ramolin. After the war, Stinnes managed the horizontal electrical trust of Siemens Schuchert to Bollen applies of the Rhine-Elbe Union cartel that was both horizontal and vertical, and to buy into just about everything else. Shipyards, steamship lines, hotels, restaurants, forests, pulp mills, newspapers. Meantime, so currency, buying foreign money with Mon and a fraction of the original figure. More than any one financier, he was blamed for the... Those were the days when you'd in wheelbarrows to your daily shopping, and for toilet paper, assuming you had anything to shit, far and all over the world, Brazil, the East Indies, the United States, businessmen like Lyle Bland found his vegetable. The theory going around at the time was that Stinnes conspired and others the out Bland. Jampf's records mentioned that he had negotiated contracts for supplying tons of private currency known as Notgeld to Stinnes and Collins, as well as bills in our republic. another of Hjalmar Schacht's many bookkeeping dodges to keep official record of any hint of weapons procurement under the terms I. Some of these facts were let to a certain legend to sit. The name of this contractor was the Slurp Paper Company. He reads his name without that much surprise. It belongs here, as do the most minor details during déjà vu. Instead of any sudden incident in monitory light, as he stares at these eight ink marks, this is a disagreeable stomach episode, tangible as vomit beginning to assert itself, the same vertigo that overtook him one day long ago in the Himmler Spielsaal. A gas bag surrounds his head, rubbery, vast, pushing in from all sides, that feeling we know, yes, but he is also getting a hard-on, for no immediate reason. And there's that smell again, a smell from before his conscious memory begins, a soft and chemical smell, threatening, haunting, not a smell to be found out in the world. It is the breath of the forbidden wing, essence of all the still figures waiting for him inside, daring and find a secret he cannot survive. Once something was done to him in a room while lay helpless. His erection hums from a certain distance like an instrument installed into his body as a colonial outpost here in our raw and clamorous world. Another office represents white metropolis far away. A sad story, all right. Slothrop, very by now, and eh? Well, sure, that fits. He can recall dimly seen Uncle Lyle. The man used to jimmy him his feet. That was from what says he blandly saw the Stennis crash coming before Moji. He has all interest in Schwarzkopf. Seller agrees to these until such time as Schwindel operative can be relieved by what happens to be in the dossier. Part of the man's personality. Code name for Hugo's clever sense of humor, the old fart. Across from Schwarzknabe now are the initials TF. Side possible. Tough shit. As a Schwarzknabe liability is the unpaid remainder to Harvard University, about $5,000 worth, including the interest, as per agreement, oral with Schwarzvater. Schwarzvater is the code for the outside possibility of bullshit, seems to be Slothrop's own father, Broderick. Black father, Slothrop. Nice way to find out your father made a deal 20 years ago with somebody to spring for your education. To think of it, Slothrop never could quite put the announcements all through the day with the comfort he enjoyed at Harvard. Well now, what was the deal between his father and Bland? I've been sold. Jesus Christ, I've been sold to I.G. Farben like a side of beef. Surveillance? Stennis, like every industrial emperor, had his own company spy system. Gee, does it there maybe... The fear balloons again inside his brain. It will not be kept down with a simple a smell, a forbidden room. At the bottom edge, I can see it, can't make it out, doesn't want to. It is allied with the word. He knows what the smell has to be. Though, according to these papers, it would have been too early for it. Though he has any of the stuff among the daytime life, still, down here, back here in the warm, early shapes where the clocks and calendars don't mean too much, what's haunting him now will prove to be the smell of Imipol XG. Then there's this recent man who was in his old room back home, a saloon of lice and bees, and warm air through an open window. Slothrop found a very old dictionary of Termin. It fell open to a certain page, prickly black face type. Reading down the page, come to Yumpf. Definition would read, 1. He woke begging it no. But even after waking, he was sure he would remain Shien any time it wanted. Perhaps you know that dream, too. Perhaps I warned you never to speak it him. You know about how Slothrop will be feeling now. His lurch to his feet, over to the door of the freight car, which is going up a grade. He drags open the door, slips out, action, action, and mounts a ladder to the roof. A foot from his face, this double row of shiny, bright teeth hangs in the air. Just what he needs. It is Major Marvey of U.S. Army Ordnance, leader of Marvey's mother, meanest-ass technical intelligence team in this whole fucking zone, mister. Slothrop can call him Maine if he wants. Boogie, boogie, catch all them jungle bunnies back here in that next car. She, you. Yeah, Mr. Slothrop. I think I've been at something. His feet are cold. This Marvey is really fat. Pants bloused into shiny combat, roll of fat hanging over a web belt where he keeps his sunglasses, horn rims, hair slack, eyes like safety valves that the pressure gets to watch to lift a P-47 from Paris far as Kassel, onto this train here west of Heiligenstadt. He's heading to coordinate with some Project Hermes people from Genetric. Sure makes him nervous, those niggers next door. Hey, you people, warn... Shit, no, African something. You mean you don't know about that? Come on, aw. Limey intelligence sure ain't too intelligent. Ha ha, no offense, understand. I thought the whole world knew. Follows a lurid tale, which sounds like something Shabel's less than giddy imagination reaching notes and such, of Hitler's scheme for setting up a Nazi empire in Black Africa, which fell through and Rommel's ass to the desert. Here's your ass, General. Ach, lieber ma, clutching comically at the seat of his own large trousers. Well, the black cadres had no more future in Africa, as governments in exile with official recognition drifted somehow into the ordnance branch German army and pretty soon learned how to be rocket technicians. Now, they were just running loose, wild. Haven't been interned as PWs, far as Marvin knows. They haven't even been... Not enough we have to worry about Ruskies, beg pardon, buddy. Now we got not just niggers, you see, but crowds. Just about every place you had a rocket. Never any all-boogie batteries, understand? Even the crowds couldn't be that daffy. One battery, that's 81 men, plus all your launch control pounds, your surveying. Chance that'd sure be one... But are they still all scattered out? You find out you got you a scoop, friend. Because if they're together now, be trouble. These two right down there, look. Hey, and they're heading for Nordhausen, pal. Fat finger poke in the chest with each word. I think they have a plan. Yeah, I think it's rockets. I was just thinking, Art, you can't trust them with us. They're a childlike river. Suggests a calm voice now out of the darkness. Our patience is enormous, though perhaps not unlimited. The African with a full imperial beard steps up, grabs the Fatima, who has time to utter one short yell before being flung bodily over the side. Cloth of sight. The man introduces himself in English as... Notes Slothrop's armband, declines an interview before Slothrop. There's no story. We're DPs like everybody else. Worried that you're headed for Nordhausen. Marvy is going to be an annoyance. You really know? A free agent. I don't know, but first... He steps away down the spine of the rug in his bare feet. A friend? A good... Bizarre shit. Well, good morning, gang. Let's start it. Off with a bang. So long to WW2. Ooh. Now I'm here to bring sunshine to you. Hey there, Herman the German. Stop your fussing and squirming. Home to stay. No, there's never a frown here in Rockets, where every day's a beautiful day. Quit kvetching, Gretchen. Go on and have a beautiful day. Nordhausen in the morning. He is a green salad, crisp with raindrops. Everything is fresh, washed. The hearts hump round dark slopes, bearded to the tops. High gabled houses, sheets of water reflecting the sky. The streets. American and Russian GI out of the doors of the taverns and makeshift PXs taking a sidearm. Meadows and logged-off wedge mountainsides flow with mottled as rain clouds blow away. Vessels perch down, sailing in and out of torn clouds. Old horses with smudged knees. Short-legged and big-chested pull wagon-loads of barrels, necks straining at twin-finger heavy, sending mud-flowers at each wet clop near the tavern. Clothrop wanders into a roofless part of town. Old people in black are bat-flittering among shops are all long looted by the lot of those who still around with baskets, 175 badges at his. From the glassless bay window of a dress shammy lying bald, arms raised to sky, hands curled, cocktail glasses they'll never hold again. Clothrop is all singing, accompanying her son of those sad little Parisian tunes in 3-4. They never completely died. Always some year takes us by sad surprise. You went away from behind, that book of hours, that is the road. Though it's another year, another me. Under the rose is under my linden tree. Be not, it's really true. It can retire a day, tender and green, new linden that I love. Her name turns out to be Gailey, and the belong named Chicherinya. Does too, part-time anyhow. Seems this Chicherinya maintains a girl in every rocket town in the zone. Yep, another rocket man author feels like a tourist. About they sit in her roofless room, drinking a pale wine known here as Nordhäuser Schatz, or slace the sky light from the mountain castles and down in the city ruins. It plays a truck is idling all its engines, the smell of exhaust washing over the maze walls where moss creeps, seek purchase, walls that sound, see all directions. Nowhere in her eyes. She might have spent all her war sighing. You came in, I almost thought you were Cicerini. The sound is all, no rockets, no harems.
It's an arrangement.
She's unorganized out here. There have to be arrangements. You'll find... Indeed he will. Arrangements for food, simple movement along the canals. Even G5 now victorious is all. No more or less real than all these others, so private as any other in the zone these days, Anoya. Just how it is. Temporary alliance-tied streets by remnants of walls in an old forting a dark glass. Out the roof that isn't there, long tree-covered mountain ascending. Or her hollows of her arm eyes with the spring of saplings in wind. The fantasy about Cicerina in progress clear and across her face. This irritates, but doesn't keep him from coming himself. Away from Gailey, but me. Or is it that Cicerina? Lips, fingers, dewy legs slide his... Then clouds. The rain has stopped. Kids go booting in a... Yeah. Scrabble. That has got the covers again. Come on, Gailey. There's a Kent drawer. Shave from its wrapper. Clears his throat. Decide how she came by it, because he knows. And soon lined and beak. Candy himself? Baby fingers creeping down along.
Getting
turned to cool.
Supposed to be.
Oh, when?
This morning. He's late. Happens.
Off the bed, halfway across the soft off. One side through all of his undershirt, fly zipper jammed, yelling, shit.
My brave Englishman.
She drawls. Why didn't you bring this up earlier, Gailey, huh?
Oh, come back. It's night time. He's with a woman someplace. He can't sleep alone.
I hope you can.
Come here. You can't go out with nothing on your feet. I'll give you a pair of his old boots and tell you all his secrets.
Secrets? Look out, Slothrop. Why should I want to know?
You're not a war correspondent.
Why does everybody keep saying that? Nobody believes me. Of course I'm a war correspondent. Shaking the brassard at her. Can't you read? It says war correspondent. I even have a mustache here, don't I? Just like that Ernest Hemingway.
Oh, then I imagine you wouldn't be looking for rocket number 00000 after all. It was just a silly idea I had. I'm sorry.
Boy, am I going to get out of here, says Slothrop to himself. This is a badger game if I ever saw one, man. Who else would be interested in the one rocket out of 6,000 that carried the Imipolex G device?
And you couldn't care less about the Schwarzgerät either, she keeps on.
She keeps on.
The what? They also call it Esgerät.
Next higher assembly, Slaughter, remember? Werner up on the canopy is hooting, a signal to that Cicerinje, no doubt. Paranoids are not paranoids, Proverb 5, because they're paranoid, but because they keep putting themselves, fucking idiots, deliberately into paranoid situations. Now, how on earth, elaborately uncorking a fresh bottle of Nordhäuser Schattensaft, thup, best Cary Grant imitation he can summon up with bowels so echoing tight, suavely refilling glasses, handing one to her, would a sweet young thing like you know anything about rocket hardware?
I read Václav's mail,
as if it's a dumb question, which it is. You shouldn't be blabbing to random strangers like this. If he finds out, he'll murder you.
I like you. I like intrigue. I like playing.
Maybe you like to get people in trouble.
All right. Out with the lower lip.
Okay, tell me about it. But I don't know if the Guardian will even be interested. My editors are a rather stuffy lot, you know. Goosebumps crowd her bare little breasts.
I posed once for a rocket insignia. Perhaps you've seen it. A pretty young witch straddling an A4, carrying her obsolete broom over her shoulder. I was voted the sweetheart of 3rd Artillery Abteilung Mo 485.
Are you a real witch?
I think I have tendencies. Have you been up to the Brocken yet?
Just hit town, actually.
I've been up there every Walpurgisnacht since I had my first period. I'll take you if you like.
Tell me about this Schwarzgerät.
I thought you weren't interested.
How can I know if I'm interested or not if I don't even know what I'm supposed or not supposed to be interested in?
You must be a correspondent. You have a way with words.
Cicerinje comes roaring through the window, a nagant blazing in his fist.
Chicherina lands in a parachute and fells Slothrop with one judo chop. Chicherina drives a Stalin tank right into the room and blasts Slothrop with a 76-millimeter shell. Thanks for stalling him, Liebchen. He was a spy. Well, cheerio, I'm off to Penemunde and a nubile Polish wench with tits like vanilla ice cream. Check you out later. I have to go, I think, Slothrop says. Typewriter needs a new ribbon. Got to sharpen pencils. You know how it is.
I told you he won't be here tonight.
Why? Is he out after that Schwarzgerät, eh?
No, he hasn't heard the latest. The message came in from Stetten yesterday.
In clear, of course.
Why not?
Couldn't be very important.
It's for sale.
The message?
The Esgerät, you pill. A man in Swinemünde can get it. 500,000 Swiss francs if you're in the market. He waits on the Strand Promenade every day till noon. He'll be wearing a white suit.
Oh, yeah? Blodgett Waxwing.
It didn't give the name, but I don't think it's Waxwing. He sticks close to the Mediterranean.
You get around.
Waxwing is already a legend around the zone. So is Chicherina. For all I know, so are you. What was your name?
Cary Grant. Gaily, gaily, gaily. Listen, Swinemünde, that's in that Soviet zone, ain't it?
You sound like a German. Forget frontiers now. Forget subdivisions. There aren't any.
There are soldiers.
That's right.
Staring at him.
But that's different.
Oh.
You'll learn. It's all been suspended. Václav calls it an interregnum. You only have to flow along with it.
Gonna flow out of here now, kid. Thanks for the info and a tip of the scuffling hat to you.
Please stay.
Curled on the bed, her eyes about to spill over with tears. Ah, shit, Slothrop, you sucker. But she's just a little kid.
Come here.
The minute he puts it in, though, she goes wicked and a little crazy, slashing at his legs, shoulders, and ass with chewed-down fingernails sharp as a saw. Considerate Slothrop is trying to hold off coming till she's ready when all of a sudden something heavy, feathered, and many-pointed comes crashing down onto the small of his back, bounces off, triggering him and, as it turns out, gaily too. Zong! Oh, gee whiz! Wings flap and Werner, for it is he, ascends into the darkness. Fucking bird! Slothrop screams. He tried again, I'll give him a Baby Ruth right up his ass, boy! It's a plot, it's a plot, it's Pavlovian conditioning or something. Chicherina trained him to do that, right?
Wrong, I trained him to do that.
She's smiling at him, so four-year-old happy and not holding a thing back that Slothrop decides to believe everything she's been telling him.
You are a witch.
Paranoid that he is, he snuggles down under the counterpane with the long-legged sorceress, lights a cigarette, and despite endless Chicherinas vaulting in over the roofless walls with arsenals of disaster all for him, even falls asleep, presently, in her bare and open arms. It's a Sunday funnies dawn, very blue sky with gaudy pink clouds in it. Mud across the cobblestones is so slick it reflects light so that you walk not streets but these long streaky cuts of raw meat. Hock of werewolf, gammon of beast. Chicherina has big feet. Gailey had to stuff pieces of an old chemise in the toes of his boots so they'd fit Slothrop. Dodging constantly for jeeps, 10-ton lorries, Russians on horseback, he finally hitches a ride from an 18-year-old American first lieutenant in a gray Mercedes staff car with dents all over it. Slothrop frisks mustaches, flashes his armband, feeling defensive. The sun's already warm. There's a smell of evergreens on the mountains. This rail driving, who's attached to the tank company guarding the Mittelwerke, doesn't think Slothrop should have any trouble getting inside. English SPOG have come and gone. Right now, American Army Ordnance people are busy crating and shipping out parts and tools for 100 A4s. A big hassle. Trying to get it all out before the Russians come to take over. Interregnum civilians and bureaucrats show up every day, high-level tourists, to stare and go, wow. Guess nobody's seen him this big before. I don't know what it is. Like a burlesque crowd. Not going to do anything, just here to look. Most of them bring cameras. Notice you didn't. We have them for rent at the main gate if you're interested. One of many hustles. Yellow James, the cook, has got him a swell little sandwich wagon. You can hear him in the tunnels calling, come and get him, hot and cold and dripping with greens. And there'll be grease on the glasses of half these gobbling fools in another 5 minutes. Nick de Profundis, the company lounge lizard,
has surprised everybody by changing inside the phone booth of factory spaces here to an energetic businessman selling A4 souvenirs, small items that can be worked into keychains, money clips, or a scatterpin for that special gal back home. Burner cups of brass off the combustion chambers, ball bearings from the servos, and this week the HEP item seems to be SA-100 acorn diodes, cute little mixing valves looted out of the Telefunken units, and the even rarer SA-102s, which of course fetch a higher price. And there's Micro Graham, who's let his sideburns grow and lurks in the Stollen where the gullible visitors stray. Psst! Psst! Forget it. Well, now you've got me curious. Thought you looked like a sport. You taking the tour? I only stepped away for a second. Really, I'm going right back. Finding a little dull? Oily Micro moves in on his mark. Ever wonder to yourself what really went on in here? The visitor who is willing to spend extravagant sums is rarely disappointed. Micro knows the secret doors to rock passages that lead through to Dora, the prison camp next to the Mittelwerke. Each member of the party is given his own electric lantern. There is hurried basic instruction on what to do in case of any encounter with the dead. Remember, they were always on the defensive here. When the Americans liberated Dora, the prisoners who were still alive went on a rampage after the material. They looted, they ate and drank themselves sick. For others, death came like the American army and liberated them spiritually. So they're apt to be on a spiritual rampage now. Guard your thoughts. Use the natural balance of your mind against them. They'll be coming at you off balance, remember. A popular attraction is the elegant Raumwaffe spacesuit wardrobe, designed by famous military couturier Heine of Berlin. Not only are there turnouts dazzling enough to thrill even the juvenile leads of a space operetta, down to the oddly colored television images flickering across their toenails, but Heine has even thought of silks for the amusing little space jockeys, Raumjockeyer, with their electric whips, who will someday zoom about just outside the barrier glow of the Raketenstadt, astride horses of polished meteorite, all with the same stylized face. A high-contrast imago of the horse that follows you, emphasis on its demented eyes, its teeth, the darkness under its hindquarters, with the propulsive gases blowing like farts out their tail ends. The juvenile leads giggle together at this naughty bathroom moment, and slowly, in what's hardly more than a sigh of gravity here, go bobbing, each radiant in a display of fluorescent plastics, back in to the waltz, the strangely communal waltz of the future, a slightly, disquietingly grainy dissonant chorale implied here in the whirling silence of faces, the bare shoulder blades slung so space Viennese, so jaded with tomorrow. Then come the space helmets. At first you may be alarmed on noticing that they appear to be fashioned from skulls. At least the upper dome of this unpleasant headgear is certainly the skull of some man-like creature built to a larger scale. Perhaps Titans lived under this mountain, and their skulls got harvested like giant mushrooms. The eye sockets are fitted with quartz lenses. Filters may be slipped in. Nasal bone and upper teeth have been replaced by a metal breathing apparatus full of slots and grating. Corresponding to the jaw is a built-up section, almost a facial codpiece, of iron and ebonite, perhaps housing a radio unit, thrusting forward in black fatality. For an extra few marks, you are allowed to slip one of these helmets on. Once inside these yellow caverns, looking out now through neutral density orbits, the sound of your breath hissing up and around the bone spaces, what you thought was a balanced mind, is little help. The compartment the Schwarzkommando were quartered in is no longer an amusing travelogue of native savages taking on ways of the 21st century. The milk calabashes appear only to be made from some plastic. On the spot where tradition says Enzian had his illumination, in the course of a wet dream where he coupled with a slender white rocket, there is the dark stain, miraculously still wet, and a smell you understand is meant to be that of semen, but it is really closer to soap or bleach. The wall paintings lose their intended primitive crudeness and take on primitive spatiality, depth and brilliance, transform indeed to dioramas on the theme, the promise of space travel. lit sharply by carbide light which hisses and smells like the bad breath of someone quite familiar to you, the view commands your stare. After a few minutes, it becomes possible to make out actual movement down there, even at the immense distances implied by the scale. Yes, we're hanging now down the last limb of our trajectory into the Raketenstadt, a difficult night of magnetic storm behind us, eddy currents still shimmering through all our steel like raindrops that cling to vehicle windows. Yes, it is a city. Vegetable, holies, and isn't that something's go away echoing as we crowd about the bloom of window in this salt underground. Strangely, these are not the symmetries we were programmed to expect, not the fins, the streamlined corners, pylons, or simple solid geometries of the official vision at all. That's for the ribbon clerks back on the tour, in the numbered Stollen. No, this rocket city, so whitely lit against the calm dimness of space, is set up deliberately to avoid symmetry, allow complexity, introduce terror, from the preamble to the articles of imagination. But tourists have to connect the look of it back to things they remember from their times and planet. Back to the wine bottle smashed in the basin, the bristle-cone pines outracing death for millennia, concrete roads abandoned year ago, hairdos of the late 1930s, indole molecules, especially polymerized indoles as in Imipolex G. Wait. Which one of them was thinking that? Monitors, get a fix on it. Hurry up. But the target slips away. They handle their own security down inside, the young rail is telling Slothrop. We're here for surface guard only. Our responsibility ends at Stollen number 0, power and light. It's really a pretty soft racket for us. Life is good and nobody's looking forward much to redeployment. There are Fräuleins for screwing, cooking, and doing your laundry. He can put Slothrop on to champagne, furs, cameras, cigarettes. Can't just be interested in rockets, can he? That's crazy. He's right. One of the sweetest fruits of victory after sleep and looting must be the chance to ignore no parking signs. There are struck peas in circles up all over the place, nailed on trees, wired on girder work, but the main tunnel entrances are pretty well blocked with vehicles by the time the dimpled Mercedes arrives. Shit, hollers the young tanker, turns off his engine, and leaves the German short at no particular angle on the broad, muddy apron. Leaving keys in the car, too, Slothrop's learning to notice items like this. The entrance to the tunnel is shaped like a parabola. The Albert Speer touch. Somebody during the 30s was big on parabolas anyhow, and Albert Speer was in charge of the new German architecture then, and later he went on to become Minister of Munitions and nominal chief customer for the A4. This parabola here happens to be the inspiration of a Speer disciple named Etzel Oelsch. He had noted this parabola shape around on Autobahn overpasses, sports stadiums und so weiter, and thought it was the most contemporary thing he'd ever seen. Imagine his astonishment on finding that the parabola was also the shape of the path intended for the rocket through space. What he actually said was, "Oh, that's nice." It was his mother who'd named him after Attila the Hun, and nobody ever found out why. His parabola has a high loft to it, and the railroad tracks run in underneath, steel into shadows. Battened cloth camouflage furls back at the edges. The mountain goes sloping away above, rock cropping out here and there among the bushes and the trees. Slothrop presents his super-duper chafe pass, signed off by Ike and even more authentic by the colonel, heading up the American Special Mission V-2 out of Paris. A waxwing, specialty of the house, B Company, 47th Armored Infantry, 5th Armored Division, appears to be up to something besides security for this place. Slothrop has shrugged on through. There is a lot of moseying, drawling, and country humor around here. Somebody must have been picking his nose. A couple days later, Slothrop will find a dried piece of snot on the card, a crystal brown visa for Nordhausen. In past the white-topped guard towers. Transformers buzz through the spring morning. Someplace chains rattle and a tailgate drops. Between ruts, high places, ridges of mud are beginning to dry out in the sun to lighten and crumble. Nearby, the loud wake-up yawn and stretch of a train whistle cuts loose. In passed a heap of bright metal spheres in daylight with a comical sign, "Please, no squeeze of the oxygen a unit, eh? How long you sfacima this country?" In under parabola and parable, straight into the mountain, sunlight gone into the cold, the dark, the long echoes of the Mittelwerke. There is that not-so-rare personality disorder known as Tannhäuserism. Some of us love to be taken under mountains, and not always with horny expectations. Venus, Frau Holda, her sexual delights. No, many come, actually, for the gnomes, the critters, smaller than you, for the sepulchral way time stretches along your hooded strolls down here, quietly through courtyards that go for miles, with no anxiety about getting lost. No one stares, no one is waiting to judge you, out of the public eye. Even a minnesinger needs to be alone. Long, cloudy day indoor walks, the comfort of a closed place where everyone is in complete agreement about death. Slothrop knows this place, not so much from maps he had to study at the casino as knowing it in the way you know someone is there. Plant generators are still supplying power. Rarely a bare bulb will hollow out a region of light. As darkness is mined and transported from place to place like marble, so the light bulb is the chisel that delivers it from its inertia and has become one of the great secret icons of the humility, the multitudes who are passed over by God in history. When the Dora prisoners went on their rampage, the light bulbs in the rocket works were the first to go. Before food, before the delights to be looted out of the medical lockers and the hospital pharmacy in Stollen number 1, these breakable, socketless, in Germany the word for electric socket is also the word for mother, though motherless too, images were what the liberated had to take. The basic layout of the plant was another inspiration of Etzel Elsch. A Nazi inspiration like the parabola, but again also a symbol belonging to the rocket. Picture the letters SS, each stretched lengthwise a bit. These are the two main tunnels, driven well over a mile into the mountain. Or picture a ladder with a slight S-shaped ripple in it, lying flat. 44 rung-like Stollen or cross tunnels, linking the two main ones, a couple hundred feet of rock mountain at the deepest pressed down overhead. But the shape is more than an elongated SS. Apprentice Hoopla comes running in one day to tell the architect, "Master," he's yelling, "Master." Elsch has taken up quarters in the Mittelwerke, insulated from the factory, down a few private drifts that don't appear on any map of the place. He's getting into a grandiose idea of what an architect's life should be down here, insisting now on the title Master from all his helpers. That isn't his only eccentricity, either. Last three designs he proposed to the Führer all were visually in the groove, beautifully new German, except that none of the buildings will stay up. They look normal enough, but they are designed to fall down, like fat men at the opera falling asleep into someone's lap. Shortly after the last rivet is driven, the last forms removed from the newly set allegorical statue. This is Ulsch's death wish problem here, as the little helpers call it. It rates a lot of gossip in the commissary at meals, and beside the coffee urns out on the gloomy stone loading docks. It's well after sunset now. Each desk in this vaulted, almost outdoor bay has its own incandescent light on. The gnomes sit out here at night, with only their bulbs shining conditionally, precariously. It all might go dark so easily in the next second. Each gnome works in front of his drawing board. They're working late. There's a deadline. It's not clear if they're working overtime to meet it or if they have already failed and are here as punishment. Back in his office, Etzel Elsch can be heard singing. Tasteless, low beer hall songs. Now he is lighting a cigar. Both he and the gnome apprentice Hoopla, who's just run in, know that this is an exploding cigar put in his humidor as a revolutionary gesture by persons unknown, but so without power that it doesn't matter. "Wait, master, don't light it. Master, put it out, please. It's an exploding cigar." "Proceed, Hoopla, with the intelligence that prompted your rather rude entrance." "But..." "Hoopla," puffing masterful clouds of cigar smoke. It's about the shape of the tunnels here, master." "Don't flinch like that. I based that design on the double lightning stroke, Hoopla, the SS emblem. But it's also a double integral sign. Did you know that?" Ah, yes, summe, summe, as Leibniz said. Well, isn't that blam? All right. But Etzel Elsch's genius was to be fatally receptive to imagery associated with the rocket. In the static space of the architect, he might have used a double integral now and then, early in his career, to find volumes under surfaces whose equations were known, masses, moments, centers of gravity. But it's been years since he's had to do with anything that basic. Most of his calculating these days, as with Marx and Phoenix, not functions of idealistic R and theta, naive X and Y. But in the dynamic space of the living rocket, the double integral has a different meaning. To integrate here is to operate on a rate of change so that time falls away. Change is stilled. Meters per second will integrate to meters. The moving vehicle is frozen in space to become architecture and timeless. It was never launched. It will never fall. In the guidance, this is what happened. A little pendulum was kept centered by a magnetic field. During launch, pulling G's, the pendulum would swing aft off-center. It had a coil attached to it. When the coil moved through the magnetic field, electric current flowed in the coil. As the pendulum was pushed off-center by the acceleration of launch, current would flow. The more acceleration, the more flow. So the rocket, on its own side of the flight, sensed acceleration first. Men tracking it sensed position or distance first. To get to distance from acceleration, the rocket had to integrate twice, needed a moving coil, transformers, electrolytic cell, bridge of diodes, one tetrode, an extra grid to screen away capacitive coupling inside the tube, an elaborate dance of design precautions to get to what human eyes saw first of all, the distance along the flight path. There was that backward symmetry again. One that Pointsman missed, but Katya didn't. A life of its own, she said. Slothrop remembers her reluctant smile, the Mediterranean afternoon, the peeling twist of a eucalyptus trunk, the same pink in that weakening light as the American officer's trousers Slothrop wore once upon a time, and the acid, the pungent smell of the leaves. The current flowing in the coil passed a Wheatstone bridge and charged up a capacitor. The charge was the time integral of the current flowing in the coil and bridge. Advanced versions of this so-called IG guidance integrated twice so that the charge gathering on one side of the capacitor grew directly as the distance the rocket had traveled. Before launch, the other side of the cell had been charged up to a level representing the distance to a particular point out in space. Brennschluss, exactly here would make the rocket go on to hit 1,000 yards east of Waterloo Station. At the instant the charge, B sub I L, accumulating in flight equaled the preset charge, A sub I L, on the other side, the capacitor discharged. A switch closed, fuel cut off, burning ended. The rocket was on its own. That is one meaning of the shape of the tunnels down here in the Mittelwerke. Another may be the ancient rune that stands for the yew tree or death. The double integral stood in Etzel Elsch's subconscious for the method of finding hidden centers. Inertias unknown, as if monoliths had been left for him in the twilight, left behind by some corrupted idea of civilization, in which eagles cast in concrete stand 10 meters high at the corners of the stadiums with a people, a corrupted idea of the people, are gathering, in which birds do not fly, in which imaginary centers far down inside the solid fatality of stone are thought of not as heart, plexus, consciousness. The voice speaking here grows more ironic, closer to tears, which are not all theater, as the list goes on. Sanctuary, dream of motion, cyst of the eternal present, or gravity's gray eminence among the councils of the living stone. No, as none of these, but instead a point in space, a point hung precise as the point where burning must end, never launched, never to fall. And what is the specific shape? whose center of gravity is the Brennschluss point? Don't jump at an infinite number of possible shapes. There's only one. It is most likely an interface between one order of things and another. There's a Brennschluss point for every firing site. They still hang up there, all of them, a constellation waiting to have a 13th sign of the zodiac named for it. But they lie so close to Earth that from many places they can't be seen at all, and from different places inside the zone where they can be seen, they fall into completely different patterns. Double integral is also the shape of lovers curled asleep, which is where Slothrop wishes he were now. All the way back with Katya, even lost as he might feel again, even more vulnerable than now, even, because he still honestly misses her, preserved by accident in ways he can't help seeing. Accident whose own much colder honesty each lover has only the other to protect him from. Could he live like that? Would they ever agree to let him and Katya live like that? He's had nothing to say to anyone about her. It's not the gentlemanly reflex that made him edit, switch names, insert fantasies into the yarns he spun for Tantivy back in the Achtung office, so much as the primitive fear of having a soul captured by a likeness of image or by a name. He wants to preserve what he can of her from their several entropies, from their soft soaping and their money. Maybe he thinks that if he can do it for her, he can also do it for himself. Although that's awful close to nobility for Slothrop and the penis he thought was his own. In the sheet metal ducting that snakes like a spine along the overhead, plant ventilation moans. Now and then it sounds like voices. Traffic from somewhere remote. It's not as if they were discussing Slothrop directly, understand, but he wishes he could hear it better. Lakes of light, portages of darkness. The concrete facing of the tunnel has given way to whitewash over chunky fault surfaces, phony-looking as the inside of an amusement park cave. Entrances to cross tunnels slip by like tuned pipes with an airflow at their mouths. Once upon a time, lathes did screech. Playful machinists had shootouts with little brass squirt cans of cutting oil. Knuckles were bloodied against grinding wheels. Pores, creases, and quicks were stabbed by the fine splinters of steel. Tube works of alloy and glass contracted, tinkling in air that felt like the dead of winter, and amber light raced in phalanx among the small neon bulbs. Once, all this did happen. It is hard down here in Mittelwerke to live in the present for very long. The nostalgia you feel is not your own, but it's potent. All the objects have grown still, drowned, enfeebled with evening, terminal evening. Tough skins of oxides, some only a molecule thick, shroud the metal surfaces, fade out human reflection. Straw-colored drive belts of polyvinyl alcohol sag and release their last traces of industrial odor. Though found adrift and haunted, full of signs of recent human tenancy, this is not the legendary ship Marie Celeste. It isn't bounded so neatly. These tracks underfoot run away fore and aft into all stilled Europe. And our flesh doesn't sweat and pimple here for the domestic mysteries, the attic horror of what might have happened, so much as for our knowledge of what likely did happen. It was always easy, in open and lonely places, to be visited by panic, wilderness, fear. But these are the urban fantods here that come to get you when you are lost or isolate inside the way time is passing. When there is no more history, no time-traveling capsule to find your way back to, only the lateness and the absence that fill a great railway shed after the capital has been evacuated. And the goat gods' city cousins wait for you at the edges of the light, playing the tunes they always played, but more audible now, because everything else has gone away or fallen silent. Barn swallow souls, fashioned of brown twilight, rise toward the white ceilings. They are unique to the zone. They answer to the new uncertainty. Ghosts used to be either likenesses of the dead or wraiths of the living, but here in the zone, categories have been blurred badly. The status of the name you miss, love, and search for now has grown ambiguous and remote. But this is even more than the bureaucracy of mass absence. Some still live, some have died, but many, many have forgotten which they are. Their likenesses will not serve. Down here are only wrappings left in the light, in the dark, images of the uncertainty. Post-A4 humanity is moving, hammering and shouting among the tunnels. Flothrop will catch sight of badged civilians in khaki, helmet liners with GE stenciled on, sometimes getting a nod, eyeglasses flashing under a distant light bulb, most often ignored. Military working parties go at root step, bitching in and out, carrying crates. Flothrop is hungry and Yellow James is nowhere in sight, but there is nobody down here even going to say howdy to, much less feed the free Lance Ian Scuffling. Oh, wait, by golly, here comes a delegation of girls in tight pink lab coats, reaching just to the tops of bare thighs, tripping up the tunnel on stylish gold wedgies.
Ah, so reizend ist.
Too many to hug at once.
Hübsch, was?
Now, ladies, one at a time, they are giggling and reaching to drape around his neck lush garlands of silvery bee nuts and flange fittings, scarlet resistors and bright yellow capacitors strung like little sausages, scraps of gasketry, miles of aluminum shavings as curly, bouncy, and bright as Shirley Temple's head. Hey, Hogan, you can keep your hula girls. And where are they taking him here? Into an empty stolen, where they all commence a fabulous orgy which goes on for days and days, full of poppies, play, singing, and carrying on. Moving into stolen 20 and up, traffic grows heavier. This was the A4 part of the factory which the rocket shared with V1 and turboprop assemblies. Out of these stolen, the 20s, 30s, and 40s, rocket components were fed out crosswise into the two main assembly lines. As you walk deeper, you retrace the rocket's becoming. Superchargers, center sections, nose assemblies, power units, controls, tail sections. A lot of these tail sections still around here, stacked alternately, fins up, fins down, row on row, identical, dimpled, ripply metal surfaces. Flothrop moseys along, looking at his face in them, watching it warp and slide by. Just a big underground funhouse here, folks. Empty dollies with small metal wheels chain away back down the tunnel. They carry four-bladed arrowhead shapes that point at the ceiling. Oh! Right. The pointed holders must have fit inside the expansion nozzles of the thrust chambers. Sure enough, here comes a bunch of them. Big fucking things, tall as Slothrop, capital A's, painted in white near the burner cups. Overhead, the fat and sinuous white-lagged pipes are lurking, and the steel lamps give no light out of their scorched skullcap reflectors. Down the tunnel's center line run lolly columns, slender, gray, the exposed threads locked in rust of long standing. Blue shadows wash through the spare parts cages, set on planking, and I-beams hung from damp and chimney-sized columns of brick. Glass wool insulation lies beside the tracks, heaped like snow. Final assembly went on in Stolen 41. The cross tunnel is 50 feet deep to accommodate the finished rocket. Sounds of carousing, of voices distinctly unbalanced, come welling up, reverberating off of the concrete. Personnel are weaving back up the main tunnel with a glassy and rubicund look to their faces. Slothrop squints down into this long pit and makes out a crowd of Americans and Russians gathered around a huge oak beer barrel. A gnome-sized German civilian with a red von Hindenburg mustache is dispensing steins of what looks to be mostly head. Ordnance smoke puffs flicker on nearly every sleeve. The Americans are singing rocket limericks. There once was a thing called a V2, to pilot which you did not need to. You just pushed a button and it would leave nothing but stiffs and big holes and debris too. The tune is known universally among American fraternity boys, but for some reason it is being sung here in German stormtrooper style, notes clipping off sharp at the end of each line, then a pulse of silence before the attack on the next line. Refrain. Ya, 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 ya. In Prussia they never eat pussy. There ain't hardly cats enough, there's garbage and that's enough, to waltz me around again, Ruski. Drunks are hanging from steel ladders and draped over catwalks. Beer fumes crawl in the long cavern among pieces of olive drab rocket, some upright, some lying on their sides. There was a young fellow named Crockett, who had an affair with a rocket. If you saw them out there, you'd be tempted to stare, but if you ain't tried it, don't knock it. Slothrop is hungry and thirsty. Despite the clear and present miasma of evil in Stollen 41, he starts looking for some way to go down there and maybe score some of that lunch. Turns out the only way down is by a cable hooked to an overhead hoist. A fat cracker PFC lounges at the controls, sucking on a bottle of wine. Go ahead, Jackson, I'll give you a good ride. They taught me how to run these in the WPA. Bracing his mustache in what he figures to be a stiff upper lip, Ian Scuffling climbs on, one foot through an eye splice, the other hanging free. An electric motor whines. Slothrop lets go the last steel railing and clutches onto the cable as 50 feet of twilight space appears underneath him. Ugh. Rolling out over Stollen 41, heads milling far below, beer foam bobbing like torches in the shadows, suddenly the motor cuts off and he's falling like a rock. Oh, fuck. Too young, he screams. Voice pitched way too high so it comes out like a teenager on the radio, which ordinarily would be embarrassing, but here's the concrete floor rushing up at him. He can see every shuttering mark, every dark crystal of Thuringian sand he's going to be splashed over, not even a body nearby to get him off with only multiple fractures. With about 10 feet to go, the PFC puts on the brakes. Maniacal laughter from above and behind. The cable, brought up taut, sings under Slothrop's hand till he loses his grip on it, falls, and is carried gently upside down and hanging by the foot in among fun-seekers around the beer keg who, used to this form of arrival by now, only continue their singing. There was a young fellow named Hector who was fond of a launcher erector, but the squishes and pops of acute pressure drops wrecked Hector's hydraulic connector. Each young American in turn getting to his feet, optional, raising his tankard and singing about different ways of doing it with the A4 or its related hardware. Slothrop does not know that they are singing to him, and neither do they. He eyes the inverted scene with a certain unease. With his brain approaching the frontiers of Redout, there comes to him the peculiar notion that it's Lyle Bland who has hold of his ankle here. So he is borne stately into the fringes of the party. Hey, observes the crew-cut youth. It's Tarzan or something. Ha, ha! Half a dozen ordnance people, juiced and roaring happily, grab for Slothrop. After a lot of twisting and shoving, the foot is freed from its wire loop. The hoist winds back the way it came to its prankish operator, and the next fool he can talk into riding it. There once was a fellow named Moorhead who had an affair with a warhead. His wife moved away the very next day. She was always kind of a sorehead. The Russians are drinking relentlessly and in silence, shuffling boots, frowning, maybe trying to translate these limericks. It isn't clear whether the Americans are here on Russian sufferance or vice versa. Somebody presses on Slothrop a shell case, ice-cold, foaming down the sides. Gee, we weren't expecting the English, too. Some party, huh? Stick around. He'll be along in a minute. Who's that? Thousands of these luminous worms are wriggling all over Slothrop's field of vision, and his foot is beginning to prickle awake again. Oh, this beer here is cold. Cold and hop bitter. No point coming up for air. Gulp till it's all... Ah! His nose comes up, drowned in foam, his mustache white and bubbly, too. All at once comes shouting from the edges of the company, "Here he is! Here he is! Give him a beer! Hi there, Major, babes, sir!" There was a technician named Urban who had an affair with a turban. It's much nicer, he said, than a woman in bed, and it's sure as hell cheaper than bourbon. What's happening? Inquires Slothrop through the head of another beer just materialized in his hand. It's Major Marvey. This is his going-away party. Marvey's mothers are all singing for he's a jolly good fellow. Now, which nobody can deny if they know what's good for them, is the impression one cannot help receiving. Where's he going? Away. Thought he was here to see that GE. Sure, who do you think's picking up the tab for this? Marvey here by subterranean light is even less engaging than he was in the moonlight on top of that boxcar. The rolls of fat, bulging eyes, and glistening teeth are grayer here, screened more coarsely. A strip of adhesive tape plastered athletically over the bridge of his nose and a purple, yellow, and green decoration around one eye testify to his rapid journey down the railroad embankment the other night. He is shaking hands with his well-wishers, booming male endearments, paying special attention to the Russians. Well, bet you've spiked that with a little vodka, huh? Moving on. Vlad, fella, how's your ass? The Russians do not appear to understand, which leaves them only the fanged smile, the Easter egg eyes, to make sense of. Slothrop is just snorting foam out of his nose when Marvey spots him and those eyes bug out in earnest. There he is, in a great roar, indicating Slothrop with a trembling finger. By God, the limey son of a bitch, go get him, boys, go get him, boys. Slothrop continuing to gaze a moment here at this finger illuminated in cute flourishes and curlicues of cherubic fat. There, there, my man, begins Ian, scuffling, by which point hostile faces have begun to close in.
Hmm.
Oh, that's right. Escape. He sloshes beer at the head nearest, heaves the empty shell case at another, finds a gap in the crowd, slithers through and flees across florid faces of drunks asleep, vaulting khaki paunches festooned with splashes of vomit, away down the deep cross tunnel among the pieces of rocket. Reveille, you hammerheads, Marvie's screaming. Don't let that sucker get away. A sergeant with a boy's face and gray hair, dozing with a grease gun cradled against him, wakes up crying, Krauts! Lets loose a deafening burst from his weapon straight into the beer barrel, which destroys the bottom half and sends a great gush of wet amber and foam surging among the pursuing Americans, half of whom promptly slip and go down on their ass. Flothrop reaches the other end of the Stollen with a good lead and goes sprinting up a ladder there, taking rungs two at a time. Shots! Terrific blasts in this sound box. Either Marvie's mothers are too drunk or the darkness is saving him. He hits the top out of breath. In the other main tunnel now, Slothrop falls into a jog down the long mile to the outside, trying not to wonder if he has the wind to make it. He hasn't gone 200 feet when the vanguard comes clambering up off of that ladder behind him. He dodges into what must be a paint shop, skids on a patch of wet Wehrmacht green, and goes down, proceeding through big splashes of black, white, and red before coming to rest against the combat boots of an elderly man in a tweed suit with white water buffalo mustaches. Grüß Gott. Say, I think they're trying to kill me back there. Is there someplace? The old man winks, motions Slothrop through the Stollen and on into the other main tunnel. Slothrop notices a pair of coveralls streaked with paint and thinks to grab them. Past four more Stollen, then a sharp right. It's a metal storage area. Watch this, the old man goes chuckling down the long shop among blue racks of cold rolled sheets, heaps of aluminum ingots, sheafs of 3712 bar stock, 1624, 723. This is going to be good. Not that way, man, that's the one they're coming down. But this oversized elf already has set about hitching cable from a hoist overhead to a tall bundle of Monel bars. Flothrop climbs into those coveralls, combs his pompadour down over his forehead, takes out a pocket knife, and saws off pieces of mustache on both sides. You look like Hitler now. Now they will really want to kill you. German humor. He introduces himself as Glimpf, professor of mathematics of the Technische Hochschule, Darmstadt, scientific advisor to the Allied military government, which takes a while. Now, we bring them this way. I am in the hands of a raving maniac. Why not just hide out in here till they forget it? But here comes dim shouts up tunnel now. All clear in 37 and 38, Chucky babes. Okay, old hoss, you guys take odds, we'll take evens. They are not going to forget it. They are making a tunnel-by-tunnel search instead. It's peacetime. They can't shoot you in peacetime, but they're drunk. Oh, boy. Slothrop is scared shitless. What do we do? You will be the expert in idiomatic English. Say something provocative. Slothrop sticks his head out in the long tunnel and hollers in his most English accent, Major Marvie Sachs! Up this way! Sounds of galloping GI boots, nail heads smacking the concrete, and a lot of other ominous metal, too, going snick, snick. Now! Beams mischievous Glimpf, setting the hoist in motion. A fresh thought occurs to Slothrop. He puts his head back out and hollers, Major Marvie Sachs niggers! I think we should hurry, says Glimpf. Oh, I just thought of a good one about his mother. Black has been disappearing inch by inch from the bite of cable between the hoist and the bar stock, which Glimpf has rigged to topple across the doorway, hopefully about the time the Americans show up. Slothrop and Glimpf light out through the opposite exit. About the time they reach the first curve in the tunnel, all the lights go out. The ventilation winds on. The phantom voices inside it gain confidence from the dark. The bundle of Monel falls with a great crash. Slothrop touches rock wall and uses the wall then for guidance through this absolute blackness. Glimpf is still someplace in the middle of the tunnel on the tracks. He is not breathing hard, but he is chuckling to himself. Behind are the hollow staggerings of the pursuit, but no light yet. There is a soft clang and sharp Himmel from the old professor. Sounds of yelling have grown louder, and now here are the first flashlights, and it's time to get out of the bathtub. What's happening, for Christ's sake? Come here, blimp has collided with some kind of miniature train, just visible now in outline. It was used once to show visitors from Berlin around the factory. They climb aboard the tractor in front, and Glimpf fiddles with switches. Well, here we go, all aboard. Lights must have been all that Marvy cut. Sparks are crackling out behind, and there's even a little wind now. Good to be rolling. Every little Nazi's shooting pool or playing potsy on the Mittelwerk Express. All the funny fascists just a-twirling their mustaches. Where we going, can't you guess? Heading for the country, just down the tracks. Never heard of shortages or income tax. Gonna be good times for Minnie and Max on the Mittelwerk Express. Glimpf has switched on a headlamp. From side tunnels booming by, figures in khaki stare. Whites of eyes give back the light for an instant before flicking past. A few people wave. Shouts go dopplering, hey, hey, like car horns at the crossings going home at night on the Boston and Maine. The express is rolling at a fair clip. Damp wind rushes by in a whistle. In the lamp's backscatter, silhouettes of warhead sections can be made out, stacked on the two little flat cars the engine's towing. Local midgetry scuttle and cringe alongside the tracks, nearly out of the light. They think of the little train as their own and feel hurt whenever the big people come to commandeer it. Some sit on stacks of crates dangling their legs. Some practice handstands in the dark. Their eyes glow green and red. Some even swing from ropes, secured to the overhead in mock kamikaze attacks on Glimpf and Slothrop, screaming, Banzai! Banzai! Before vanishing with a giggle. It's all in play. They're really quite an amiable. Right behind, loud as megaphones in massed chorale, there once was a fellow named Slattery. Oh, shit, says Slothrop. Who was fond of the coarse gyro battery. With that 50-volt shock, what was left of his cock was all slimy and sloppy and spattery. Ja, 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 ja. In Prussia they never eat pussy, und so weiter. Can you get back and uncouple those cars? Glimpf wants to know. Reckon so, but he seems to fumble at it for hours. Meantime, there was a young fellow named Pope who plugged into an oscilloscope. The cyclical trace of their carnal embrace had a damn nearly infinite slope. Engineers, Glimpf mutters. Slothrop gets the cars uncoupled and the engine speeds up. Wind is tearing at all Irish pennants, collar points, cuffs, buckles, and belts. Back behind them there's a tremendous crash and clank and a few shouts in the dark. Think that stopped them? Right up their ass in four-part harmony. There was a young fellow named Yuri, fucked the nozzle right up its venturi. He had woes without cease from his local police and a hell of a time with the jury. Okay, Jocko babes, got that old phosphorus flare? Stand by, good buddy. With only that warning, in blinding concussion, the icy Noctiluca breaks, floods through the white tunnel. For a minute or two, nobody in here can see. There is only the hurtling on through amazing, perfect whiteness. Whiteness without heat and blind inertia. Slothrop feels a terrible familiarity here, a center he has been skirting, avoiding as long as he can remember. Never has he been as close as now to the true momentum of his time. Faces and facts that have crowded his indenture to the rocket. Camouflage and distraction fall away from the white moment, the vain and blind tugging at his sleeves. It's important. Please look at us. But it's already too late. It's only wind, only G-loads. And the blood of his eyes has begun to touch the whiteness back to ivory, to brushings of gold and a network of edges to the broken rock. And the hand that lifted him away sets him back in the Mittelwerke. Whoo-wee! There's that sucker now! Out of the flare, inside easy pistol range, emerges a lumbering diesel engine, pushing ahead of it the two cars Slothrop uncoupled. Itself stuffed with bloodshot, disheveled, bloated Americans, and at an apex perched lopsided on their shoulders, Major Marvy himself wearing a giant white Stetson and clutching two .45 automatics. Slothrop ducks down behind a cylindrical object at the rear of the tractor. Marvy starts shooting wildly, inspired by hideous laughter from the others. Slothrop happens to notice now that what he's chosen to hide behind actually seems to be another warhead. If the Amitol charges are still in, say, Professor, could the shockwave from a .45 bullet at this range succeed in detonating this warhead here if it struck the casing? Even if there was no fuse installed? Well, Tyrone, now that would depend on many things. Muzzle velocity, wall thickness, and composition. Counting at least on a pulled arm muscle and hernia, Slothrop manages to tip and heave the warhead off onto the track while Marvy's bullets go whanging and crashing all over the tunnel. It bounces and comes to rest, tilted against one of the rails. Good. The flare has begun to die. Shadows are reoccupying the mouths of the Stollen. The cars ahead of Marvi hit the obstacle a solid wonk, doubling up in an inverted V. Diesel brakes screech in panic. Yike! As the big engine derails, slews begins to tip, Americans grabbing frantically for handholds, each other, empty air. Then Flathrop and Glimpf are around the last curve of the integral sign, and there is another huge crash behind them, screaming that prolongs, echoing as they see now the entrance ahead, growing parabola of green mountain slopes and sunlight.
"Did you have a car when you came?"
inquires the twinkling Glimpf.
"What?"
Flathrop recalls the keys still in that Mercedes. "Oh!" Glimpf eases on the brakes as they coast out under the parabola into daylight and roll to a smooth and respectable stop. They flip salutes at the B Company sentries and proceed to hijack the Mercedes, which is right where that rail left it. Out on the road, Glimpf gestures them north, watching Slothrop's driving with a leery eye. They wind snarling up into the Harts, in and out of mountain shadows, pine and fir odors enveloping them, screeching around curves and sometimes nearly off of the road. Slothrop has the inborn gift of selecting the wrong gear for all occasions. And anyhow, he's jittery, eye in the mirror, and out the back of his head a swarm with souped-up personnel carriers and squadrons of howling thunderbolts. Coming around a blind corner, using the whole width of the pavement to make it, a sharp road-racing trick he happens to know, they nearly buy it from a descending American army deuce and a half, the words "fucking idiot" clearly visible on the mouth of the driver as they barely scoot past. Heartbeats slamming low in their throats, mud from the truck's rear tires slapping over them in a great wing that shakes the rig and blots out half the windshield. The sun is well past its zenith when they pull up, finally, below a forested dome with a small dilapidated castle on top, hundreds of doves, white teardrops dripping from its battlements. The green breath of the woods has sharpened, grown colder. They climb a switchbacking path strewn with rocks among dark firs toward the castle in the sunlight, jagged and brown above as a chunk of bread left out for all its generations of birds.
"This is where you're staying?"
"I used to work here. I think Zwitter might still be around."
There wasn't enough room in the Mittelwerke for many of the smaller assembly jobs, control systems mainly, so they were put together in beer halls, shops, schools, castles, farmhouses all around Nordhausen here, any indoor lab space the guidance people could find.
Glimpf's colleague Zwitter is from the TH in Munich.
"The usual Bavarian approach to electronics," Glimpf begins to frown. "He's bearable, I suppose." Whatever mysterious injustices spring from a Bavarian approach to electronics now remove Glimpf's twinkle and keep him occupied in surly introspection the rest of the way up. Mass liquid cooing, damped in white fluff, greets them as they slip in a side entrance to the castle. Floors are dirty and littered with bottles and scraps of papers. Some of the papers are stamped with the magenta Geheime Kommandosache. Birds fly in and out of broken windows. Thin beams of light come in from chinks and erosions. Dust motes, fanned by the dove's wings, never stop billowing here. Walls are hung with dim portraits of nobles and big white Frederick the Great hairdos, ladies with smooth faces and oval eyes in low-necked dresses whose yards of silk spill out into the dust and wingbeats of the dark rooms. There is dove shit all over the place. By contrast, Zwitter's laboratory upstairs is brightly lit, well-ordered, crammed with blown glass, work tables, lights of many colors, speckled boxes, green folders, a mad Nazi scientist lab. "Plastic Man, where are you?"
"There's only Zwitter."
Stocky, dark hair parted down the middle, eyeglass lenses thick as the windows of a bathysphere, the fluorescent hydras, eels, and rays of control equations swimming seas behind them. But when they see Slothrop, there is immediate clearing there, and glazed barriers come down. P.S. What's this? Who are these people? What's happened to the apples in old Glimpf's cheeks? What's a Nazi guidance expert doing this side of the fence at Garmisch with his lab intact?
Oh, there's Nazis in the woodwork, fascists in the walls, little Japs with bucktooth grins are gonna grab you by the balls. When this war is over, how happy I will be, gearing up for them riskies and go round number three.
In the days when the white engineers were disputing the attributes of the feeder system that was to be, one of them came to Enzian of Bleicherode and said, We cannot agree on the chamber pressure. Our calculations show that a working pressure of 40 atu would be the most desirable, but all the data we know of are grouped around a value of only some 10 atu.
Then clearly, replied the Ngwarorelu, you must listen to the data.
But that would not be the most perfect or efficient value, protested the German.
Proud man, said the Ngwarorelu. What are these data if not direct revelation? Where have they come from if not from the rocket which is to be? How do you presume to compare a number you have only derived on paper with a number that is the rocket's own? Avoid pride in design to some compromise value.
From Tales of the Schwarzkommando, collected by Steve Edelman. In the mountains around Nordhausen and Bleicherode, down in abandoned mine shafts, live the Schwarzkommando. These days it's no longer a military title. They are a people now, Zone Hereros, in exile for two generations from Southwest Africa. Early Rhenish missionaries began to bring them back to the metropolis, that great dull zoo, as specimens of a possibly doomed race. They were gently experimented with, exposed to cathedrals, Wagnerian soirees, Jaeger underwear, trying to get them interested in their souls. Others were taken back to Germany as servants, by soldiers who went to put down the great Herero Rising of 1904 to 1906. But only after 1933 did most of the present-day leadership arrive as part of a scheme never openly admitted by the Nazi Party for setting up black juntas, shadow states for the eventual takeover of British and French colonies in Black Africa, on the model of Germany's plan for the Maghreb. Sud-West by then was a protectorate administered by the Union of South Africa, but the real power was still with the old German colonial families, and they cooperated. There are several underground communities now near Nordhausen, Bleicherode. Around here they are known collectively as the Erdschweinhöhle. There is a Herero joke, a bitter one. Among the Obajimba, the poorest of the Hereros, with no cattle or villages of their own, the totem animal was the Erdschwein, or aardvark. They took their name from him, never ate his flesh, dug their food from the earth just as he does. Considered outcasts, they lived on the veldt in the open. You were likely to come across them at night, their fires flaring bravely against the wind, out of rifle range from the iron tracks. There seemed no other force than that to give them locus out in that emptiness. End of side 10. To continue, change side selector switch and turn the cassette over.